content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello and welcome to our May 2026 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in the program. This program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. And if you're not a patron, but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that as well at the end of the program. This month, we'll look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of April at the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. We begin the program this month with a new one by J.D. Robb. This one is called Stolen in Death. A violent death and a vault of stolen treasures has Eve Dallas struggling to solve crimes old and new. Here's the plot. A blow to the head with a block of amethyst has left multi-billionaire Nathan Barrister dead, while nearby a vault, its door ajar, sits filled with priceless paintings, jewelry, and other treasures. Lieutenant Eve Dallas's husband, Rourke, who misspent his youth in Ireland as a scrappy thief, recognizes at least two stolen pieces among the hoard. The crime scene suggests a burglar caught in the act, but only one item seems to be missing. Then it's revealed that the vault had actually belonged to the victim's late father, and no one in the household knew it was there until a recent remodeling project exposed it. Now, to protect the family name and business, they explained to Eve they've been looking for a way to return the ill-gotten gains anonymously and avoid the police. But now the police are all over their elegant house and having a bigger, bloodier mystery to solve. By all accounts, Nathan Barrister was a good man, a generous employer, a devoted husband and father. As for his father, he clearly had secrets. Now it's up to Eve and her team to find out if those secrets got Nathan killed, and if it was a crime of passion or revenge. Once again, the name of this one is Stolen in Death by J.D. Robb. Next, let's take a look at a new book on the scene by an author we haven't heard from too much on this program. It's called The Girl from Devil's Lake, and it's by Judith A. Jantz. Arizona County Sheriff Joanna Brady solves her biggest case yet, from a body in the desert to crime spanning decades and countries, in the thrilling latest installment in this New York Times best-selling suspense series. Sheriff Joanna Brady is looking forward to the holidays with her busy family and to celebrating her daughter Jenny's graduation from the police academy. But the family is interrupted when a body is discovered beneath a flooded bridge in the Arizona desert, and Joanna is called onto the case. A young boy was murdered, and the details of the crime scene tell Joanna two things. This was not the killer's first murder, and it's only a matter of time before he kills again. As Joanna digs deeper into the case, she begins to understand this murder is just one piece of a much, much bigger puzzle. she uncovers unlikely connections between cases of mysterious deaths and missing persons having long since gone cold that extend far beyond the confines of her small town and include the discovery of a body near Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To get justice for the victims and to save the town of Bisbee from a predator, Joanna must chase down every dangerous lead. Meanwhile, as a dogged journalist is circling the case and privileged information is leaked, Joanna can't be sure who to trust. Could a prolific killer be hiding in plain sight? And how far will that person go to keep his many crimes hidden? Once again, this book is called The Girl from Devil's Lake, and it's by Judith A. Jantz. Now, here's a very popular book this past month by Michael Connelly that we hear from quite a bit on this program. And this is The Lincoln Lawyer is Back with a Case Against an AI Company whose product may have been responsible for the murder of a teenage girl. Now, following his resurrection walk and need for a new direction, Mickey Haller turns to public interest litigation, filing a civil lawsuit against an artificial intelligence company whose chatbot told a 16-year-old boy that it was okay for him to kill his ex-girlfriend for her disloyalty. Representing the victim's family, Mickey's case explores the most unregulated and exploding AI business and the lack of training guardrails. Along the way, he joins up with a journalist named Jack McAvoy from the book The Poet, who wants to be a fly on the wall during the trial in order to write a book about it. But Mickey puts him to work going through the mountain of printed discovery materials in the case. McAvoy's digging ultimately delivers the key witness, a whistleblower who has been too afraid to speak up. The case is fraught with danger because billions are at stake. It is said that machines became smarter than humans on the day in 1997 that IBM's Deep Blue defeated chess master Garry Kasparov with a gambit called the Knight's Sacrifice. Haller will take a similar gambit in court to defeat the mega forces of the AI industry that are lined up against him and his clients. Once again, this book is called The Proving Ground, and it's by Michael Connelly. Now let's turn to a new book by David Baldacci. This one is called Nash Falls. A business executive becomes an unjustly wanted man. Here's the plot for this one. Walter Nash attends his estranged father Tiberius' funeral, where Ty's army buddy, Shock, rips into him for not being the kind of man the Vietnam vet Ty was. Instead, Nash is the successful head of acquisitions for Cyberetic Investments, where he earns a handsome paycheck that supports his wife, Judith, and his teenage daughter, Maggie. An FBI agent approaches Nash after the funeral and asks him to be a mole in his company because the feds consider chief executive Rhett Temple a criminal consorting with some very dangerous people. It's a chance to be a hero, the agent says, while admitting that Nash's personal and financial risks are immense. Indeed, readers soon find Temple and a cohort standing over a fresh corpse and wondering what to do with it. Temple is not an especially talented executive, and he frets that his hated father, the chairman of the board, will eventually replace him with Nash. Father-son relationships are not glorified in this tale. Temple is cartoonishly rotten. He answers to a mysterious woman in Asia whom he rightly fears. He kills. He beds various women, including Judith, whom he tries to turn against Nash. The story's dramatic turn follows Maggie's kidnapping, where Nash is wrongly accused. Believing Nash's innocence, shock helps him change completely with intense exercise, bulking up and tattooing his body, and learning how to fight and kill. Eventually, he looks nothing like the dweeb who'd once taken up tennis instead of football, much to Ty's undying disgust. Finding the victim and the kidnappers becomes his sole mission. As a child watching his father hunt, Nash could never have killed a living thing. But with his old life over, now he will kill, and he will take any risks necessary. His transformation is implausible, though at least he's not green like the Incredible Hulk. Loose ends abound by the end, as he ignores a plea to not get on that damn plane, so a sequel is a necessity. Hokey plot, but good fun. Once again, that's a new book by David Baldacci, and the title of it is Nash Falls. Now, here's another book that was popular last month. It's called The Black Family Who Built America, The McKissicks, Two Centuries of Daring Pioneers. It was written by Cheryl McKissick Daniel and Nick Chillis. The review here that we're reading is done by Peter Klenodt. The Black Family Who Built America is the story of the indomitable McKissick family, whose construction business began in slavery and rose to prominence constructing churches, university buildings, sports stadiums, and other major building projects across the country. At a time in America when issues of equality and diversity have generated such anger and division, the McKissicks' story of thriving and growing despite the numerous barriers they faced also reveals that racism has never gone away. In a work as much autobiography as family history, the author details growing up in Nashville in an affluent black neighborhood, describing how her parents built their business first within their own black community and then against the old boy network of construction corporations who preferred working with white-only companies. She moves on to New York and chronicles a world of bigotry, corruption, and selfish politicking. Her path and that of her company is blocked by minefields intended to make it impossible for the female-led minority business to succeed. And yet, she and her business did. This book illustrates the continuing battle in America for an equal playing field for minorities trying to establish themselves in a fair, competitive society. As a history of the ongoing and unfinished battle against white impediment to equality, this book gets right to the root. The mystery is why the author does not do the same with her own family, for whom, in the end, she seems to express only disappointment that they will not pick up the fight. Sounds like a fascinating book. It's called The Black Family Who Built America, The McKissicks, Two Centuries of Daring Pioneers. And the book was written by Cheryl McKissick Daniel and Nick Chillis. It was reviewed by Peter Klenodt. Now, another very popular book. We talked about this one last month, I think, and just a brief description here because it is so popular. It's called Theo of Golden, and it's by Alan Levy. One spring morning, a stranger arrives in the small southern city of Golden. No one knows where he came from or why. His name is Theo, and he asks a lot more questions than he answers. Theo visits the local coffee house where 92 pencil portraits hang on the walls. Portraits of the People of Golden, done by a local artist. He begins purchasing them one at a time and putting them back in the hands of their rightful owners. With each exchange, a story is told, a friendship born, and a life altered. A story of giving and receiving, of seeing and being seen. Theo of Golden is a beautifully crafted novel about the power of creative generosity, the importance of wonder to a purposeful life, and the invisible threads of kindness that bind us to one another. And just on a personal note, I'm right in the middle of reading this one, and it is wonderful, so I can certainly recommend it to you. It's called Theo of Golden, and it's by Alan Levy. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. We're glad you're with us. Now let's move on to another book, relatively new. It's called Bitter and Sweet, and it's by Rhonda McKnight. Two sisters at a crossroad in life find the answers to their problems in the lessons from the past. Mariah never pretended her marriage was perfect, but that didn't mean she ever suspected her husband of 10 years would not only ask for a divorce, but steal the business she built for them. Defeated and depressed, she's not sure how to bounce back from the manipulative betrayal. Sabrina has been self-destructing for years, maybe since she was born, but certainly since the death of her longtime boyfriend. Barely scraping by and living in her van, she's struggling to figure out what's next for her when all she's ever wanted to do is bake cakes like her mother did. When Mariah and Sabrina's grandmother sends them a cryptic text message summoning them to Georgetown, South Carolina, both assume their ailing grandfather's health has declined. Instead, the estranged sisters are faced with their grandmother's undeniable request, save the family restaurant. Through letters written by their great-great-grandmother, Tabitha, Mariah and Sabrina learn a heartbreaking yet powerful story of struggle and survival. As the whole truth about Tabitha's complicated past unfolds, the sisters are inspired by her ability to forge her own way in Charleston, a beautiful and prosperous city that was also rife with oppression under Jim Crow. With the lessons in their family's past guiding them, both sisters have a chance at a different life. If they can find a way to bridge the gap that tragedy and unhealed trauma forced between them. Told in a dual timeline that alternates between the 1920s and present-day Charleston, South Carolina, Bitter and Sweet is an emotional story about love, one family's perseverance, and the bonds of family and heritage. Once again, the name of that one is Bitter and Sweet, and it's by Rhonda McKnight. Now here's a book by James Patterson and Susan DeLallo. This one is called The Invisible Woman, and anything by James Patterson hits the top list one time or another for sure. Here's the plot for this one. An undercover FBI agent investigates a family with suspected ties to organized crime by posing as their live-in nanny in this thriller from James Patterson. And no one sees her, but she sees everything. Eleanor Gilbert was once a young woman with a thriving career at the FBI. Now, decades past solving crimes with the Bureau, she is personally and professionally forgettable, which is exactly what her former FBI boss needs. He disguises Eleanor as a middle-aged nanny and casts her as an agent on the inside of his investigation into a New York art dealer suspected of ties to organized crime. But as Eleanor pushes toward the truth, her superpower, anonymity, morphs into a fatal flaw. The more the invisible woman integrates into her host family, the more dangerously memorable she becomes. Once again, this book is called The Invisible Woman, and it's by James Patterson and Susan DeLallo. Now for another big name in the publishing world. John Grisham is back with another great legal thriller. He's back with his first ever whodunit, even more suspenseful than his courtroom dramas. As a small-time lawyer accused of murder races to find the real killer to clear his name. The title of this book is The Widow, and it's by John Grisham. Here's the plot. Simon Latch is a lawyer in rural Virginia, making just enough to pay his bills while his marriage slowly falls apart. Then into his office walks Eleanor Barnett, an elderly widow in need of a new will. Apparently, her husband left her a small fortune, and no one knows about it. Once he hooks the richest client of his career, Simon works quietly to keep her wealth under the radar. But soon, her story begins to crack. When she is hospitalized after a car accident, Simon realizes that nothing is as it seems, and he finds himself on trial for a crime he swears he did not commit. Murder. Simon knows he's innocent, but he also knows the circumstantial evidence is against him, and he could spend the rest of his life behind bars. To save himself, he must find the real killer. Now here's some comments I read from a Devish review. Thankfully, Simon isn't as mercenary or heartless as Eleanor's previous lawyer, who included a $500,000 bequest for himself. Instead, Simon helps her to divvy her estate to a number of charities through trusts, which he would, of course, manage, paying himself $500 an hour, and also encourages her to leave a little money to her two selfish and estranged stepsons, who have recently reappeared in her life. Now, initially, he digs into her finances to ensure that she's telling the truth, but Eleanor is very secretive and offended that Simon doesn't believe her. In the end, Simon accepts her word and befriends her, taking her for regular lunches and becoming someone that she can rely on. And when she has a car accident and is hospitalized, Simon seeks power of attorney and an advance health directive to make decisions on her behalf. When she takes a turn for the worse in hospital, Simon is reluctant to turn off her life support, deferring to medical team to make those decisions. Unfortunately for Simon, the police get a tip-off that her death is suspicious, and it's discovered she was poisoned by cookies he'd gifted to her. In no time at all, Simon is arrested and charged with her murder. Now, Simon is our narrator, so we know fully well he's not responsible for her death. We do know her money drew him to her case, but in many ways it seems like he came to care about her a little, and he's kind of got a good heart. Grisham does a good job at pacing the novel, so the wait for Simon's days in court isn't laborious, and we soon move into the trial, where it seems the prosecution is making a lot of assumptions with no real evidence. I like the background color here, the reviewer says. Simon's marriage ending, his relationship with his children complicated by the allegations and arrest, being confronted with his gambling problem, and realizing he's hit rock bottom. And, of course, Grisham does legal thrillers very well. I confess I didn't, however, appreciate the direction this ultimately took, which seemed very left-field random. Perhaps more suspects to muddy the waters might have allowed more false leads, but it felt a little directionless and lacked some closure for me, the reviewer says, meaning I enjoyed all but the very end. Although perhaps the message here from Grisham is one of the randomness of the universe, or fate, or something. The book is called The Widow. It's been in the top 10 ever since it came out here, and it's done by very popular author John Grisham. Now let's take a look at another relatively new book. This one is called A Bird in the Hand. It is part of the George and Molly Palmer Jones series, and it is by author Anne Cleves. Before Shetland and Vera, Anne Cleves wrote the George and Molly Palmer Jones series, following remarkable mysteries in a birdwatching community, now in print for the first time in the United States. In England's birdwatching paradise, a new breed has been sighted, a murderer. Here's the plot for this one, A Bird in the Hand. Young Tom French is found dead, lying in a marsh on the Norfolk coast, with his head bashed in and his binoculars still around his neck. One of the best birders in England, Tom had put the village of Rushy on the birdwatching map. Everyone liked him. Or did they? George Palmer Jones, an elderly birdwatcher who decides quietly to look into the brutal crime, discovers mixed feelings aplenty. Still, he remains baffled by a deed that could have been motivated by thwarted love, pure envy, or something else altogether. But as he and his fellow twitchers flock from Norfolk to Scotland to the Scilly Islands, in response to rumors of rare sightings, George, with help from his lovely wife Molly, gradually discerns the true markings of a killer. All he has to do is prove it before the murderer strikes again. Once again, this is a story called A Bird in the Hand. It's part of the George and Molly Palmer Jones series by the popular author Anne Cleves. And that's just about all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Thanks for joining me. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services, simply Google or search for Accessible Books, North Carolina Library. Or you can call toll-free 888-388-2460. Again, 888-388-2460. You can also use those same numbers and website to join the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.